Today's daf in Masechet Yevamot, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is daf Nun Gimel. I would like to start the daf with the beginning of the Machlokes Rebbe and the Chachamim, because I think it's very important to see the six different approaches to what this Machlokes is, because I believe that it's a lesson that the Gemara is giving in how to approach sugyas in general. Tanya Idach is where we're up to, which is six lines below that. Tanya Idach. So we did this yesterday, but let's go over it again. So Tanya Idach. We have a brisa that says that hacholeitz liyevimto. Somebody goes ahead and he gives chalitza. Now it's not clear over here what kind of chalitza we're talking about. Are we talking about a absolutely kosher chalitza? Are we talking about maybe a chalitza psula? There's some data that's missing here, and that's going to give us possible approaches to understanding the machlokas. But in any event, it says over here, if you do chalitza, and then you go ahead and you give her a kedushin. Now remember what's involved in that. If you had given a kosher chalitza, then bepashtus, the kedushin afterwards would be dependent on whether you hold like Rabbi Akiva or the Rabbanan, correct? If you hold that kedushin on a chayve lavim is not chal, so there's no question that there's a chiyuv lav over here, right? Because you're left with having given chalitza, kivan shelo bana, shuv lo yivne. According to Rabbi Akiva, that lav is sufficient to prevent kedushin from being chal. And therefore, if you gave a chalitza, and then you went ahead and you gave kedushin, according to Rabbi Akiva, it definitely wouldn't do anything. But according to the Chachomim, if you go ahead and you give kedushin on a chai ve'lav, the kedushin is chal. Obviously, you're not allowed to sleep with her, but you would still need to give her a get. That would be the pashtus. Now, we don't believe that we're looking to go specifically, I'll leave it to Rabbi Akiva over here, because it's a machlokas between Rabbi and the Rabbanan. And therefore, the standard, as we said earlier, the way that we paskin, we paskin this way in the Mishnah, even though that's not binding necessarily, but basically all of the sugyas assume that ein kedushin tovsim b'chai ve'kritut, but kedushin are tovsim b'chai ve'lav. Now, there's a bit of a complication here, which is that once you give chalitza, remember that there's a machlokas, Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, about whether the other yevamah in this story now revert to being an Isser Kores, because they're not allowed to marry their brother's wife. And the Zika that was Matir, the brother's wife, once one of the brothers acts, either with Yibum or Chalitza, the Isser of Eshetach is removed only vis-a-vis the acting brother, but vis-a-vis the rest of the family, it reverts to the Isser of Eshetach, and that becomes Kores. Okay, but that is only Alibet Reish Lakish. And over here, we're talking about the same brother goes ahead and gives kedushin. In which case, according to Reish Lakish, even the same brother is not going to be involved in an Isser Kores. So now let's take a look at the machlokas. If you go ahead and you're Mekadosh, but Pashtas, it should be a good kedushin. Nonetheless, Rebbe says, yes, if it were a normal kedushin, it would be a good kedushin. So if you just go ahead and you're Mekadosh her the same way you would be Mekadosh any woman, not the woman that happened to have once been your Yevama, so then it would be a kosher Kedushin, and you would require a get. Obviously, you can't retain her as a wife because she is usher to you with a lav. But if you gave the Kedushin with the words, I'm giving you this Kedushin as my dear Yevama, then ain't Sirchayim in a get. There's no point in a get. Why? We'll see. For Chachamim Omrim, Bein Shiki Chalash Umishut, Bein Shiki Chalash Im Yabut, Tzrichem in a get. The question of how he stated the type of Kedushin that he wants is irrelevant. Now, what the Gemara is about to do, it's going to engage in six different interpretations of this Machloket, which are a tremendous limud about how not to jump to conclusions. In other words, our first take on things normally is to attempt to see them as relating to some type of profound issue in the nature of what it is that we're discussing. But do we have a right to do that? Or should we look to the possibility of there being an almost irrelevant side issue that might be involved in a machlokas. And the question is, how much of a side issue before we jump to conclusions? So what we're about to do is we're going to look into how much of a primary issue this is or how much of a secondary issue this is. If the Gemara does this often, it's possible that it's actually a machlokas between these tanoim about how much you have a right to assume is involved in a machlokas of tanoim. So Rabbi Yosef says, well, I'll tell you how I read the machlokas, my time at the Rebbe. The problem over here is that you are essentially being oder b'nichse hager, the kasava shalohen, and you're not going to be kaina. What in the world? Well, imagine a situation like this. You're the next door neighbor of a ger who died. And the ger who died, the first person who gets to, without any heirs, obviously, and that's why it has to be talking about a ger, because if he weren't a ger, then there's no such thing as a person who doesn't have heirs. So this is a person who has no heir. Okay. So if that's the case, if you had done any action that was a chazaka of improving his field. So let's say you would have gone to the next door and you would have hoed around the grapes, you know? So then you would have been kone his property. But what you did was, you did what you thought was hoeing your own grapes, and it turns out that when we get the papers in court, that those grapes were actually on his property, not on your property. And therefore, you were not kone, even though it was on his property, because you had the reality is because you had no intent to be kone. You thought you were just hoeing your grapes. Okay. Now, Rabbi Yosef says that's not the point. The point is that what you thought was that you were doing an act that would be having impact only on your own property, right? So, if that's the case, if you were thinking that, and you actually would have need to be kaina it from someone else, then it is not a proper kinyan. Why is that, says Rabbi Yosef? Because it's basically the same idea over here. This yevama is related to your brother? Not any longer. This yevama essentially is a hefker woman. Nobody owns her. She owns herself. So in that case, it's like nichse hager, right? Now, you thought that you were getting her because you have a special rights to her, because she is yours because of your brother's marriage. Well, that's the same thing. You thought over here you were doing your own grapes. But in fact, they were hefker grapes. So over here, this woman is a hefker woman. You should have done a normal kedushin. And instead, you tried to get her through your brother, and that is because of that. That's meaningless, because through your brother was your own. What the heck? The reason that you're not kone in that case is because you didn't have any intent to do a kinyan, for God's sake. What does that have to do with here? Over here, you wanted to be kone this woman, right? Fine. So you, instead, you said it the wrong way. You know, what do I care? The bottom line is, did you do an act of kinyan kedushin? Do I care whether you imagine that she is yours through your brother and you're doing a kinyan, or she's nobody's woman and you're doing a kinyan? It's the same kinyan, for heaven's sake. Therefore, says Abaye, if you're going to compare this to a case of nichse ager, imagine a case like this. The property next door is owned by a ger up to a certain line in the property, and then the rest of the property is owned by another ger, both of whom were killed in a car crash without any heirs. You went ahead and you dug around the grapes of the line to the right, which belonged to ger A, and you thought it was still part of the property of ger B. Who cares? In that case, what would be the din? In that case, I don't really care, because you would be kaina since you had the mind to be kaina, and the property was hefker because this fellow died without any heirs, which is the only reason that we need to stipulate it's talking about a ger. We will never find anyone that does not have an heir. Fine. So therefore, let's see that inside. Says Abaye, it's not the same at all. Hatam lo kabakavi l'mikne, he has no intent to be kona, and over here he does have intent to be kona. If you want to compare it to this strange case that you're comparing it to, halo damya ela lo oder benichse ger A, v'kasav reshur shal ger B. So in that case, you would be kona. And that's what happened over here. You have intent to make a kinyan. Do I care whether you thought that it was the kinyan of your brother's wife because she's your brother's wife, or your kona, your brother's ex-wife? What's the difference? I don't care. And therefore, it's a perfectly good kinyan. I will tell you, says Abaye to Rav Yossi, the real explanation of the machlokas over here. I need to concentrate here. Take the chair. I will tell you the real machlokas, okay? What we're talking about over here is that basically you dealt with a kedushin that you called ma'amar. That's the case. And if you make a kedushin that you call ma'amar, so then you've got a problem. Why? Because now is my understanding of a very deep machlokas between Rebbe and the Rabbanan. So according to Rebbe, the idea of the ma'amar is not a normal kedushin. The way that the Rabbanit structured Ma'amar is that they built Ma'amar as a kinyan that is a strengthening of the Zika that exists with the Yavama. So therefore, they say, look, in the presence of Zika, if somebody does this act that is similar to Kedushin, we call it Ma'amar. Okay? If that's the case, if it's post-Chalitza, there is no Zika. And therefore, if you use the word ma'amar, you were not talking about a normal kedushin, because ma'amar is a special case that is built upon the givens of Zika. And since over here, atai chalitza ve'afka atal Zika, it took off the Zika. So because of that, you cannot make the ma'amar at all. Mashenkin, according to the Chachamim hold there's no connection between the two. Ha'ilachudeikoi ve'ha'ilachudeikoi. You have two completely different kinyanim over here. One was given to you in a Torah of Zika. The other is a normal kedushin that the Rabbanit said is meant to be chal here as well, mid Rabbanit. Okay? So therefore, what do I care whether you did chalitza before or you didn't do chalitza before? The bottom line is, it's the same kinyan that would have been there before. So if I had done it before and I had used that language, Ilu Omar, before he gave the chalitza, he would have said to his kachili b'mamar yabin. Would that have been a good kinyan? Absolutely. It's a wonderful kinyan. So what do I care if I say it now? Why did it become less now? Milo mahani, ashtanami mahani. So because of that, it's kosher kinyan and makes no difference. That's how I read the machlokas. Okay. So far we have Reb Yosef, who makes it dependent in the case of Oder ben Ichse Hager, and it depends on what your intent of who you're being koneed from. We have the second approach is Abaye, and that it depends on how you understand the nature of Ma'amar. Is Ma'amar built upon Zika, or is Ma'amar a separate kinyan? Okay, that would be the Rabbanan. Rava Amar, I have a completely different explanation. If you would have used the language that Abaye said, wouldn't have made the slightest bit of difference. If you would have said ma'amar yavamim, everybody has made it that that's a good kinyan, because that's the nature of the kinyan of ma'amar. But what we're talking about over here is that you are such a smarty pie that you had your own idea of how it is that you want to make this kinyan. So instead of saying ma'amar, what you said was, zachum ma'yaskinan could go into amarli is kachili bizikat yapmi. You said that you want to go ahead and make a special kinyan of kedushin that is there because of the fact that God has made us a pair in heaven, right? So since I'm already zakuk to you, I want to make that official by doing an act of kedushin. So now the question is that a meaningful statement? Does it change what's going on? So Rebbe says, look, I hold that that concept of Zika exists, right? And since it exists, this goes back to our normal machlokas, yesh Zika or ain Zika. So I hold if a person makes a statement like that, it's a meaningful statement, because what he's trying to do is to essentially say, If there is a Zika here, then I want to strengthen it with this act of semi-kedushin. But if there's no Zika here, so then he's not doing anything, according to his own words. I'm coming here to strengthen the Zika. But suppose you hold Ein Zika, right? Then if you hold Ein Zika, how do we interpret the statement, I want to strengthen the Zika? Remember, if you hold Ein Zika, it doesn't mean there's no Zika. It means that the Zika is merely a concept that is saying in one word the fact that the Torah makes you chayav to go through with this marriage. It's all that it means. It doesn't mean that it actually creates a state of marriage between you. Okay, so then obviously, if a person says those words, and you hold there is no such thing as Zika, so then the point of the statement is merely to say that since I'm responsible for you, Minatira, and you were my brother's wife, I want to take you Bikidushin. If I gave you Chalitza before, that doesn't change anything, because the words Yesh Zika do not refer to any state at all. They just refer to the state of your mind. So if the state of your mind is what it was before, what's changed? Who cares? So Rabbanan say, there is no such thing as a Zika that creates a state of marriage between them. Therefore, if I had used that language before I gave the Chalitza, would anyone have come along and say, oh, wait a minute, you can't give Bimer using that language? Nobody would have said that. Why? Because it would have been understood that the language is just an idiosyncratic way of your addressing your responsibilities that you feel psychologically towards this woman. They do not refer to a technical state of Zika. So if you wish to restate that now, what's the difference? So therefore, me, Korah, if I would have given this before doing Chalitz, and I would have used that language, no one would have said, oh, you can't use that language. There is no Zika. Of course you can use the language. You're not referring to a state of Zika. So therefore, Ilu Amarla at that point before you gave the Chalitza, Hitkachili Bizikat Yabmin, wouldn't that be a perfectly normal act of Ma'amar? Absolutely. So why is it any less now? Hashtanami. So it's just basically saying, I want to give you Ma'amar. That's all. And because of that, it still works as a perfectly kosher Kedushin. Okay, so now we have Rava's approach, the third approach. Now let's take the fourth approach, Rav Sharvia. Rav Sharvia points out, you'll notice that there's a piece of information missing over here. Namely, you didn't say whether this was a chalitza that was the first thing that you did, or whether it was a chalitza that was following a get or a ma'amar to maybe another one of the avamas. I don't know what the case is, but remember that the Mishnah introduced several cases of a chalitza psula. Now, you need to take that into consideration. I'm suggesting that maybe you've jumped to a conclusion. Maybe the machlokas between Rebbe and the Rabbanan would never have applied in a case of chalitza kshera, because if it were a chalitza kshera, and you would have said after a chalitza kshera, hitkatshili bezikat yabmin, then nobody in his right mind would have said that there is a, remember, you were assuming a moment ago, Rava, that there's a machlokas of yesh Zika. There is no, there's absolutely no problem with Zika. And once, there definitely is Zika. Once I am going to take off the Zika with a real chalitza, so then for sure that's not going to help. Kuli alma lo pligi lo mahane. I can't use the Zika as a basis of a marriage if it doesn't exist, because both the Rabbanan and Rebbe agree that there is Zika. The problem is over here, if the chalitza didn't completely remove the Zika, then this statement is still a valid statement and such a mimer would exist. That's the machlokas. So here we're talking about a chalitza psula, and the machlokas between Rebbe and the Rabbanan about this case is based on the machlokas of how does a chalitza psula impact the din of what comes afterwards. So remember that in the Mishnah, it's very clear that a chalitza psula, ein acharei chalitza klum. That was talking about a chalitza psula, remember. Because the Mishnah talked about a case where you first had a get or you first had mamar. That might have been given by somebody else, one or the other. I don't care what the case is. It would still have been called a low-class chalitza. And nonetheless, the Mishnah said, Einach ha-chalitza klum. So the only reason that Rav Sharvi has the right to introduce here another machlokas about whether after a chalitza psula, then and only then there would be a basis to do ma'amar is obviously not going according to the Mishnah as we have it. It would be going according to yet another shita that we have later on. And that shita is, as we'll see, the shita of Abba Yossi ben Chanan, we call Yochanan in the Braita, but the Gemara always refers to it as Abba Yossi ben Chanan. And according to him, he holds that if a chalitza is psula, then there is a makom for get or maimer. Good. So that's good for the machlokas over here. So if you would have had here a chalitza psula, that's the machlokas. Rebbe holds chalitza psula like our Mishnah. It's a complete bittul of the Zika, and like it says, Einach rechalitza klum. And therefore, it doesn't matter what you do afterwards, and the mama will not be chal, because you gave a chalitza. What's the difference if it's pasul or not? Masha Einkein, the Rabbanan hold, that chalitza psula does not take off Zika. And since it doesn't take off Zika, so according to Abba Yossi ben Chanan, the halacha is that the maimer would be meaningful. You don't have to put in all of this stuff that you put in, that Al-Khabamayaskina, and it's talking about any specified Zika's Yabin and all of that. The only question is, does Chalitza Psula possible or not? So here's our first lesson in terms of jumping to conclusions. The way Rav Sharvi explains it is that the idea of the possibility of missing data always should come first before you jump to a conclusion that, well, since you didn't say anything, you must mean a chalitza ksheira. Because a braita is built upon the way that a word is used in the Mishnah. It doesn't stand on its own. And since the braita was referring to the chalitza as it appears there, it's perfectly natural for us to discuss what the din would have been if somebody, between Rebbe and the Rabbanan, if somebody would have tried to do a normal maimer after chalitza psula. And therefore it would simply be the machlokas Yossi ben Chanan, Abba Yossi ben Chanan, and the Rabbanan. That's how I think is the simplest way of understanding it. Certainly not like Rabbi Yosef, not who has to do with Kinyonim, not like Abaye, not like Rava, where we need to restate what it is that he said. Did he say it was Maimer? Did he say it was through Zika? That's all inserting things. You have no right to insert things. And as a matter of fact, says Rav Sharvi, you not only do you have no right to insert things, you have no right to assume that a case is the simple case that you're assuming, because it may be talking about a chalitza psula. Now let's talk yet about another case, another possibility. Rav Ashi says, actually, it doesn't necessarily have anything to do with chalitza ksheira, chalitza psula. You're also introducing things because you are making it dependent on the selection of a specific case of chalitza. Nonsense. Everybody would agree. Kulei Alma hold chalitza psula ain't a potera. You could say perfectly well that it's only going like Abba Yossi ben Chanan. There's no problem over here. There may be an absolutely ancillary question that is involved here. What would be the ancillary question? Well, once you're going to talk about changing the language, why don't you simply change the case? And the question is, over here, b'chalitza that you made a t'nai on. So you said, let's say, I'm giving you chalitza with a condition that you pay me $100,000 for you to get out of the Yibum state. Ha, ha, ha. Very contemporary kind of issue. Let's take advantage of the fact that you are dependent on me, and now I'm going to charge you for doing chalitza so that you can get married to other people. The court hasn't caught up with that yet. You know, they may have, in some places, have caught up with the Gittin people who try to do this, but not with the chalitza people. Okay, so this guy's got a great idea. Here's how he's going to make money. He's going to basically shoot one brother at a time, have the wife fall to chalitza, and then charge them for doing the chalitza, right? Okay, so this is the new Ponzi scheme here. And so the question is, what happens? This is a big machlokas. Can you make a condition on chalitza? You see, the chalitza is really not up to you, is it? Can you make a shliach to do chalitza? No. So if you can't make a shliach to do chalitza, it's a mitzvah on you that the Torah put on you. And when the Torah puts mitzvahs on you, you cannot make conditions as to where that is going to be chal. So because of that, if she ends up not paying you after you do the chalitza, if you hold that ein t'nai b'chalitza, so then the chalitza will be perfectly kosher. That's what's going on over here. Acha b'yesh t'nai b'chalitza kamiflaget. The machlokas is purely in terms of whether there is such a concept. The Rabbanan hold that you can make a t'nai in chalitza, the way you make a t'nai in any type of kinyan where you're being makna or being kaina. And therefore, according to the Rabbanan, the Mar Sava Rebbe holds ain't t'nai b'chalitza. So therefore, if you can't make a t'nai, so even if you go ahead and you say to her that, okay, I want this to be, let's take the case, and that I want it to be with the Zika of Yabmin. Let's take your case. It don't make any difference because you can't say anything about what is going on over here. So the original chalitza is not going to be any kind of difference if you made a $100,000 stipulation, if she doesn't pay it to you. The mimer afterwards cannot work, even though you believe there's a zika there because it's not there. Mashenkain, according to the Rabbanan, the t'nai is a binding t'nai. If she doesn't pay you the money, then the chalitza never worked, in which case your statement that you want to give her the ma'amar over here is perfectly valid because there still is zikas yabmin. So that could be the machlokas. Now, our final approach, Ravina, he says even that is jumping to the conclusion. You want to talk about ancillary issues. So you think, wow, I mean, the craziest thing that they might be discussing, because we're not given the information, the craziest thing might be if there's a t'nai. I'll make it even crazier, says Ravina. Everybody is agreed about the dinim of a t'nai, okay? Yes, you can make a t'nai, there's no problem. But remember, there's a big machlokas in the Gemara about how a t'nai works. Must you state, the way that t'nai b'nei gad uv'nei ru'uvein is explained in the Torah, that a condition has to stipulate both possibilities in order for it to be a binding condition. So therefore, if you only said, this is a good chalitza on condition that you give me $100,000, but you did not add, but if you don't give me $100,000, it is not a good chalitza. That's the machlokas. Since you didn't add the other side, which is called the t'nai kaful, that you mention both sides of the t'nai, you didn't mention both sides, that's the machlokas. So kuleyam, everybody's made a yesh t'nai b'chalitza. And what's the machlokas over here? The question of a t'nai kaful. So Rebbe holds be'ina t'nai kaful, and the Rabbanan hold lo be'ina t'nai kaful, and therefore, basically, this has nothing to do with anything in Masechet Yevamos per se. Okay. So we've gone the full gamut from having a profound insight into the nature of Mamar, knowing whether it's based upon Zika or not based upon Zika, and getting progressively less meaningful in terms of Yevamos. Then we got to the issue, well, it's just another expression of Yesh Zika or Ein Zika. Maybe it has nothing to do with Mamar, or it has to do with the dinim of Kinyan in general. And we've gone downhill from there. I must say, Gavi doesn't seem to have been going downhill. I mean, sitting there under those palm trees with the pina colada and God knows what else. I mean, he's definitely getting the rest of us hungry. Where's the bananas? Where's the pineapples? Okay. No, no, no. He's here in Eretz Yisrael. What are you talking about? Where do you see such beautiful things? All right. So this basically brings us to an end of this absolutely beautiful analysis of the possible machlokas between Rebbe and the Rabbana. All right, so let's move on now.
Rebbe touched the bottle, Rebbe has to be Messiah.
I hear. I didn't see Gavi sharing any of it, but okay. Chaim. Fine. What a mess. Okay. What a mess they made of it. What a mess. Okay. All right, continuing on. Next piece of the Mishnah. So the next piece of the Mishnah said what? That if Cholatz, V'yasa Maimer, V'nasan Get, U'ba'al, so we talked about first doing Chalitza and following it with whatever. You can follow with a Get, with Maimer, with Bia, or first doing Bia and following it with whatever. Doing Maimer, giving her a Get, giving a Chalitza, either to the same woman, to a different Yavama, and so on and so forth. That was the next piece in the Mishnah. And the Mishnah said, Ein acharei chalitza klum. That's very disturbing because, I mean, the last part of the discussion was, Baal v'yasa maimer v'venasan get, or by, why didn't we say Ein achar bia klum? Since in this part of the Mishnah, we're discussing what you started with, and it's absolutely true, Ein achar bia klum, because that's a complete bia. So why did you leave that out? I don't get it. So v'nissan nami Ein achar bia klum, no? Abaye v'ravad amr thought, well, yeah, of course. Of course. It's thee. When you say the Mishnah to yourself, of course you should add in the words, Ein achar bia klum. But the Tana didn't bother doing that because it's so obvious. So there was no need to. Okay, so, I mean, but if you're going to choose one or the other, then the last thing that you mentioned was Baal, Nasan Laget, Maimer, and so on. So why not say, Ein achar bia klum? No? I mean, why stress the part about the Chalitza? The Tana didan. The reason that he stresses Ein achar Chalitza klum is because he'd rather talk about ways that a Yavama becomes muteret to anybody, rather than talking about ways that the Yavama becomes absolutely kanuya to you and only you. So it takes the more general idea of chalitza, which means that you're being mater her, lekola eila. That's all. But effectively, saying Ein achar chalitza klum is meant for you to put in your own mind, to me, Ein achar bia klum, exactly the same way. Now, the next thing that we said is that this is true whether we're talking about one Yavama or we're talking about two Yavamas. Would be the same case if there's only one Yavam. Now, that is not so posh, because remember that there was this additional din of Ben Azai we mentioned earlier, and the Mishnah is definitely not going according to Ben Azai, because Ben Azai says it depends. It's true, this business of Ein Ma'amar Achar Ma'amar, and it's true also what the Rabbanan say, that Yesh Ma'amar Achar Ma'amar, but it depends on the case. Yesh Ma'amar Achar Ma'amar, if you have two separate Yavamim. So over there, the Chachamim gave each one of them the right to do Ma'amar, and therefore one can do it after the other. But Ein Ma'amar Achar Ma'amar, like Rav Gamliel says, if you only have one Yavam, because that single Yavam can only do Ma'amar once. And therefore, it makes no sense for him to give Ma'amar afterwards. Now, the Mishnah that says it makes no difference whether there's one Yavama or there's two Yavamas, obviously is not going like Ben Azai, because Ben Azai says there absolutely is a difference. So then that means in tabbing to the second case, where we're talking about the case of two Yavamas, we would then have to say that we're not going a limit of an Azai, which is a Chiddush. Now, remember that we have tabs, and the Ketzad is moving on to a tab in your spreadsheet, which is trying to explain the din of two Yavamas. And this is a new case. So Ketzad, how would I apply the same din we had before? How would it work out if, let's say, I do Ma'amar with a one Yavama, and then I go in and I give Chalitza to the other Yavama, and so on. That's how the Mishnah continues. Okay. Now, the problem is that the Mishnah specified, in the case of the two Yavamas, that I gave Ma'amar to Yavama A, and I gave Chalitza to Yavama B. Why? Why do I do that? What would be different if I give Chalitza to Yavama A also? I mean, isn't that exactly the same halacha? Because if I give Chalitza to the Yavama to whom I'm already given the Ma'amar, so what would be the problem? That it's a Chalitza that is psula, because she still needs a get for her Ma'amar, correct? But that would be true even if I gave chalitza to the same Yavama. Does it really change if I give the chalitza to the second Yavama? Well, that depends on whether we hold like Shmuel, right? Remember that Shmuel's shita was that in the event that you have two Yavamas, one of them will create a problem with the chalitza because it'll be a chalitza gerua. Let's say you gave a get or ma'amar to one of the Yavamas, and you have the other one who's your real Yavama, and you didn't do anything to her to mess things up, and you go ahead and you give chalitza to the one to whom you give the get, then Shmuel said, you will not pater the second pure Yavama because you gave a chalitza psula. If you give the chalitza to the other Yavama that you never touched with the get and with ma'amar, then both Yavamas will be, in fact, mutarot based on that chalitza. Now, since the Mishnah insists on a case in which after giving ma'amar to Yavama A, you do chalitza to Yavama B, and there and only there is where the Mishnah says that there's nothing after chalitza, maybe that is specifically because of the fact that you gave the chalitza to Yavama B, the one that you hadn't ruined. And that's what Shmuel said, that in a case where you did chalitza to the Yavama to whom you had already given ma'amar, then the other Yavama would not be petura, and you would have to give a separate chalitza. So that's one possibility. Now, if it's not coming to tell me that, well, we need to say this case, then there's another thing that the Mishnah might be doing. Now, I don't know which one it's doing. This is how Tosfos understands it. I don't know which one it's doing. But, I mean, either this is telling me that Shmuel is right, or it's telling me that Rav Yosef is wrong. Because remember, Rav Yosef's diuk before is never throw out an old dishwasher. So, if that's what we learned from the Mishnah, then over here, you're basically throwing out your old dishwasher. Because what the Mishnah is saying is you could have given chalitza to the Yavama that you had already passed for the kahuna by giving ma'amar to, because you're going to need to give her a get. And nonetheless, the Mishnah is saying there's no problem in giving the chalitza to the one that is going to be perfectly kosher to a kohen if you wouldn't have given her chalitza. So therefore, the Mishnah is either backing Shmuel or it is absolutely denying Rav Yosef. That's the point. Obviously, I can't prove one or the other, but I mean, the way that I will learn will depend on whether I hold of Shmuel or I don't. If I hold of Shmuel, then I'll read it like Shmuel. If I don't hold of Shmuel, then I will have to say that it's a tiyufta of Rav Yosef, because what other reason would there have been for Bedavka saying this one? Says the Mishnah, no. It doesn't say here that you can do chalitza. It said if you did do chalitza, which has nothing to do, therefore, with the question of what you ought to do. And what we're talking about is bidiavad. And all we're trying to do is indicate the relationship of one yavam to two yavamas. Don't come down on my head as if I'm suggesting anything. I'm not suggesting a thing. Okay, so please can we move on from all of this, because it didn't mean anything. All right. Now we talked about a case of giving a get to Yavama A and then giving a get to Yavama B, and it says that nonetheless you have to go ahead and get chotzot. Chotzot. Now chotzot. Chotzot sounds like they both need chalitza. It's Lashon Rabbim. Why do they both need chalitza? Oh, that seems to be a riot to Rabba Bar Avuna's halacha, the Omer Rabba Bar Avuna. If the chalitza is psula, and in this case the chalitza is psula because it comes after a get, then you need chalitza from all of the brothers. And therefore the cases over here is telling me that if each yavam gave her a get, you need chalitza from both of them. And if you gave a get to both, so therefore, you're going to only be able to give a chalitza psula. Both yavamas require that chalitza psula. Wow. Straining state out in the Mishnah, Rabba Bar Avuna. Says the Gemara, no, not necessarily, because the word chotzot does not necessarily mean both yavamas need chalitza. Chotzot, remember, oftentimes means all people in this situation need chalitza. So in which case, it has nothing to do with giving multiple chalitzas. I don't have a riot to Rabba Bar Avuna from this case, if this is the way that we understand it. Next. The Mishnah then says, if you give a get to Yavama A, and you give a chalitza to Yavama B, this seems to be, and we're going to go through exactly the same thing that we went through with Mamar, okay? So just have patience, we'll run through it. It's the same question, repeat it. So it seems to be a raya to Shmuel, because it says to give the chalitza to Yavama B, who didn't get the get. And that is a raya to Shmuel, who says that if you only have a chalitza psula, you can't pater a Yavama who was not touched by the get, right? And is it a raya, or is it perhaps a tiyufta of Rav Yosef, because you're spoiling that Yavama for the kahuna, as opposed to the first Yavama whom you had already spoiled by giving the get to? And it's the same answer. The Mishnah is not making suggestions. Mikatani cholet, cholat katani. And therefore, you can't bring any raya because it's just talking about bidyavad. It was so done. Bidyavad means it was so done. That's what the word means. And that's all it's coming to tell me. And then what about the next piece? Also repetition. If you were cholatz for one, and then cholatz with the other, or you were gave bia to one, and bia with the other, in achare chalitza klum, we have the same problem in this tab that we had in the first tab. Why does it say in achare chalitza klum? Why doesn't it say in achare bia klum? And we have the same answer that we had before. Abaye v'rava d'amar tavaye. Well, obviously, you're meant to use your mind, and in your mind, say, ein achar biaklum, of course. Well, why didn't the Tana use the last case, which was the bia case, instead of using the chalitza case, to illustrate the concept of the removal of Zika, which would leave you without doing anything afterwards, because in our Mishnah, because of Rabbi Akiva, he didn't want to. Tana didan. The Tana wanted to discuss a case of chalitza, because chalitza leaves the Yavama free to marry Mashenka in the case of bia. It means that she's stuck with you. So therefore, we prefer to talk about the universal heter of chalitza. That's all. Same idea that we had before, and no problem. And this is true, whether we're talking about one yavam with two yavamas, or two yavamim to one yavam, to one yavama, it's all the same. It means that if a yavam does chalitza with one of the yavamas, that going ahead and doing mamar to the second yavama is meaningless. And if he does chalitza, so the other ones, a mamar with that yavama, if we have two, also makes no difference, and so on. Now, this is not so simple. Why? Because it's all predicated on all of the brothers being the same, and there only being the iser of kivan shelo bana, shuv lo yivneh, correct? That's the only way that it works. So according to Rabbi Yochanan, who says that if one of the brothers gives either chalitza or yibum, that the din is that all of the other brothers are only going to be usher with kivan shelo bana shuv lo yivne, or with bayit echad ubone ve'ino bone shnei batim, depending on the respective cases of chalitza or yibum. So then I understand that the case is stated over here in order to make it clear that ein kedushin tov simbechayve lavin, because that's the only reason why ein acharei klum, and it's only because I created a situation of an iser lav. But according to Reish Lakish, who holds that they revert to an iser karet, so then why do I need to teach that ein kedushin tov simbechayve kritut, where we've had that a dozen times elsewhere? Why would I need to even state these cases? So if you hold like Rabbi Yochanan, and that tells me that the rest of the brothers are only going to be over one lav or the other of Eino Bone, or Shnei Bati, Bayit Echad Ubone, so then Itzer Klashim Inanet Kedushi Tov Sibachai V'Lavin, to tell me that the Mishnah is going to leave the Rabbi Akiva. But according to Reish Lakish, who holds that only the single brother who acted on the Zika is the one who is not going to be Chai of Chorus in any subsequent relationships, but all of the other brothers will be Chai of Chorus, and that kula beta is a chorus koi, so then why does the Tana have to say this case? Obviously, well, you have to tell me ain't kedushin tovsim b'chai v'krisis, that the other yavama, if we said over here, the other yavam, it's the case of two yavams, so the other yavam is not going to be able to do my, of course he's not going to be able to do my, but it's a chorus, I understand it. You might as well try to do kedushin to your mother. I mean, it makes no sense. What's the point? Seems to be a raya, therefore, to Rabbi Yochanan. Says Reish Lakish, oh, ha, ha, ha. Yes, very nice. I love the way you focus in on one issue, which only works in according to you. May I point out that the Mishnah is constructed in a way that in the end doesn't make any more sense to you than it does to me, okay? Look at the other parts of the Mishnah. You'll see you're going to have to say the same thing that I say, namely that the Mishnah goes through all of the tabs in order to keep the spreadsheet parallel. That's all. It doesn't want to change each tab and have a different spreadsheet, for heaven's sakes. So it talks about cases that are not absolutely necessary because in the other context, they were necessary. That's all. And even you're going to have to say that because take a look. How about the way you, Rabbi Yochanan, you hold, okay? What about the end of the Mishnah? The end of the Mishnah talks about a case where he was Baal and then the other Yavam, in the case where we're talking about, the other Yavam goes out and does Ma'amar, that Ein Achar Biaklum, I mean, not that it actually says that, but it does say Echad Yavam Echad Echad Shtei Yavamas, which boils down to saying those words, right? So, I mean, I tell you, that is necessary to know. I mean, she's the Itzrich Lashmina Ein Kedushin Tovsin Be'eshes Ish. If one was Baal, so then what in the world are we talking about? We need to know that you can't, if the first Yavam already did Bia, so then, of course, the second Yavam can't go ahead and give Kedushin to someone else's wife. Do I really need to know that? I ask you, because you said if you have two Yavamim and Yavam Echad, so this is necessary. This is a joke. Ella, what are you going to say? That you're keeping the different tabs in the spreadsheet even, that's all. So since we talked about the first tab, which was the Hataras Yavam Echad V'Yavama Achas, right? And then we ketzaded the tabs to the second case where we were talking about the two Yavamas V'Yavam Echad. And you'll say, I mean, well, obviously, if it's another guy, he can't marry your wife. Obviously. So what are we supposed to do? Take that piece out of the spreadsheet. So we keep it the same. That's all. So I did a ton of Shtei Yavamot. V'yavam echad. So we had first the movement to the next step, which was shtei yavamot v'yavam echad. Once we had, this is what I would say, once we needed to talk about shtei yavamot and yavam echad, we tabbed to the case of shnei yavamim and yavama achas, even though you're telling me that's silly. What do I need to know that for? It's in the Sakara. So fine. So it's silly. You're right. But you yourself admitted that we have to keep the tabs even. So I'm just saying we keep all of the tabs even. So what are you coming down on my head for? We're both basically in the same spreadsheet. Now, the next thing we had, if you did chalitza, and then you did maimer, and then you gave a get, or if you were miyabimer, you were boyal, and then you went ahead and gave her a get, or did ma'amar. Now, I understand why we need the cholatz v'yasa ma'amar. That's a chiddush. What's the chiddush? That after chalitza, you gave ma'amar, that the chalitza doesn't allow the ma'amar to be meaningful. The chiddush is, I mean, admittedly, it's not a giant chiddush, but it's still a chiddush, because Salkadait Chamina, look, I could have thought, didn't we make a lot of these takanas because of the possibility of confusion? So I might have thought that, well, let's make an additional takana for maimer, that even a maimer post-chalitza should be a serious maimer and require a get, because if we don't do that, people might get confused and they'll think that a mimer before chalitza, also the chalitza will potter it and you won't need to give a get. And therefore they're going to end up not undoing their mimer. Therefore, kamash v'lo de lo gazrina. So we understand that that's not an issue. But the question of a case where you did chalitza and then you gave a get, I mean, like, what? What possible meaning would there be in doing chalitza and then giving a get? And now, so what should I do? What do you want me to do? What would be the chiddush to telling me if there's only one yavam and one yavama, and he then goes out and gives a get to the woman that he already gave chalitza to? Yes. And therefore, what will now happen? Says the Gemara, look, man, it's the same point of parallel tabs. That's the point. So, v'latayimech. All right. V'latayimech. So, according to you, how are you going to explain Ema Seifa? Take a look at the closing case over here. Bo'al v'yasa mamar. Baal v'natan get. So, okay, I understand. If you were boiled in the case of a single yava, and you gave a get, that's a chiddush, because I might have thought that we should say that a get after be'ila should not let the yavama out. Why? Even though, obviously, once she's your wife, l'kol davar, why can't you give her a get? It won't give her a b'nei rabbanan, there'll be a chumrah, because we made a thought, let's make a gezeira, that if we allow a yavama out after he was baal and he did the yibam, maybe we would think that if you gave a get before you slept with her, it would also pater her, which would be a disaster, because then you would be mater the yavama l'shuk, right? And everybody knows the difference between the get after the yibam and before the yibam. Fine. But what possible need is there to tell me that in a case where a yavam was baal, his yavama, and that then he goes ahead and does ma'amar? Yeah. Okay. So this is, what could you possibly add? I mean, there's absolutely no meaning to it. She's your complete wife. You want to go ahead and have a really romantic date and take your wife out and give her a ring and say, will you marry me? I mean, yes, thank you very much. Yes, darling, I'll marry you. I mean, we've been married 50 years. I know, but isn't it nice to start again? Fine, okay, you want to do that, go right ahead. We have no objections to romance. What does the Mishnah have to say? That it doesn't really accomplish anything. As you know, moments of romance are worth about 5 minutes of canceling nagging, but that's about it, right? So why does the Mishnah have to teach me that it's not effective? Okay. Sorry for the cynicism. Ella. So therefore, you're going to have to say that the real meaning is that I did it. Tana chalatzva asam mamar. Tana nami ba'ava asam mamar. Look, the bottom line is that we're just trying to keep things parallel. That's all. So it's not only that we need to keep the tabs parallel. We also want to keep the spreadsheet parallel. And we're going to cut out parts of it. So therefore, we say ba'ava asam mamar. Zero. Okay, thank you. It's zero. But I knew that it was zero. But once that's true, so I'm also, I did a boy, let me say, ba'al v'na sanget. Tananami chalat v'na sanget. So then it works out for answering the giving the get also. Because even though you pointed out, I mean, what could possibly be added? Nothing. You're right. Nothing could be added. But I needed to teach what you said. There was a chiddush above an asanget, so there's also a chiddush of chalatz v'nasanget in terms of keeping it parallel. That's all. Then we have the next piece of the Mishnah, which talked about that bia makes a difference whether it's in the beginning or it's in the middle. And Rabbi Nechemiah argued, and Rabbi Nechemiah said, no, it doesn't make a difference whether we're talking about bia, or we're talking about chalitza. It doesn't matter whether it's betchila, be'emtza, besof. Either of them, it makes no difference what you do afterwards, and there is no such thing as a bia psula, according to Rabbi Nechemiah. It's always the same. And now, there's one thing that has been missing that we keep referring back to, who we called Abba Yosef ben Yo, but here we give the full name. We called him Abba Yosef ben Hanan before, but here's the Braita, which was all based on. The Mishnah is clearly leaving out the fourth approach. The truth is that if we talk about all of the details, so we've got the machlokas between the Gamaliel and the Chachamim, then we also have Ben Azai, then we had Rabbi Nechemiah, and therefore if we include Ben Azai, there's a fifth sheet that we have to talk about over here, which is Abba Yossi ben Yochanan Ish Yerushalayim. Because it says in the Braita, Abba Yossi ben Yochanan Ish Yerushalayim Omer Mishum Rabbi Meir, Achas be'ila v'achas chalitza, only b'tchila, ein acharei aklum. But be'emtza u'besof, yesh acharei aklum. So that means that there's three primary machlokas in over here. There's the Tanakama, who holds this besides the other shitas of Rabbi Gamliel and Ben Azai's variation on Rabbi Gamliel. So the Tanakama holds there's a nafkamina between a bia psula and a chalitza psula. So therefore, bia, remember, the Gemara went through. There's a strong reason to make a gezeira about bia, because if we're going to say that bia after a get it's completely kosher to make a yibum, so then people might think that you can also be boil after chalitza, because people's mind get and chalitza are basically different ways of dissolving a marital relationship. That was a very definite problem. So then you might end up going ahead. And if we're going to allow it the other way, let's look at Gabia get. And what if you would allow, if we would allow Bia after Mimer and say that it's completely kosher for your Yibam, with a different Yavama obviously referring to, so then you might come to be Matir Yibam, Acher Yibam with a different Yavama, right? So there was good reason to do that. I understand. So that, and only that was a Gezerah. But we tried to figure out, like the Gemara said, so why isn't there a Gezerah about a Chalitza Psula? And the Gemara answered, okay, you tell me what the Gezerah is. Don't tell me what the Gezerah isn't. So explain to me, why should there be a Gezerah? And we couldn't come up with any reason for there to be a Gezerah. And therefore, according to the Tanna Kamma, Chalitza Psula works. Doesn't matter if it's Betchila and it's a Chalitza Kshera, or it's Be'emtzer B'sof and it's a Chalitza Psula. Okay, so that's the Tanna Kamma, who holds Bia, there's a mucker for a Gezerah, the Ika, the Lemigza Gazrina. Chalitza, where there's no mucker for the Gezerah, Lo Gazrina, right? That I understand. I understood Rabbi Nechemia also. What's Rabbi Nechemia hold? He says, what is this nonsense about a Bia Psula? What? You really think people are so dumb? You can't make Gezerahs that is Torah for dummies. There's a limit to how dummy someone can be and still be part of the whole issue. There's no point in making a Gezerah Bia, because you're saying, well, you know, we should say that Bia after a get is not really good enough to be kind of your Yavama, because then people will go ahead and say, well, if you gave Chalitza, you can go ahead and do Bia also. I'm like, who is really that dumb, you know? Everybody knows that the way that you deal with Yibum is either through Yibum or Chalitza. Everybody knows that. So even the Chalitza d'oraisa, I mean, even if you're a five-year-old who's going to cheder, you know about Chalitza. So therefore I say, Chalitza, which is a d'oraisa, is well known by everybody. Mida yada, everybody knows that that works. How would they think that therefore you should be able to go ahead and sleep with the other Yavama? It's nonsense, sir, with your Yavama. And as far as your other idea, let's make a Gzeira of Bia Acher Mama. That you said was very important, you know, because we're worried that if we're going to allow you to do Bia Acher Mama with the other Yavama, then you'll end up doing Bia after taking one Yavama, you'll go ahead and take another Yavama. That's also insane. I mean, every child knows what you're supposed to do with the Yavama. So given the Bia is a D'oraisa, so then people know. I mean, what does Mamar have to do with it? I say there's a limit to dummies. Okay, that's Rabbi Nechemia. But what is the basis for this idea of, did I finish? Maybe not. I think the other thing that you said, I'll just say it again in case I didn't. Vidika Amrit, Eligzar Bia Acher Mamar, Mishum Bia Acher, I think I did. Mishum Bia Acher Bia, Bia is the Araisa and everybody knows. But what is Abba Yossi ben Chonan's logic over here? Because I understand he doesn't hold of Rabbi Nechemia and he does hold of Torah for dummies. Fine. Okay, so he made a Gezerah for Bia, but we couldn't figure out any reason to make a Gezerah on the Chalitza, right? Ah, he holds of Torah for dummies. So he says, look, you know, people make such kinds of absurd comparisons that if we don't make a concept of a Chalitza Psula that follows Mimer and Get, people will not realize that Mimer and Get mess the world up, you know. So therefore, they may end up ignoring the thing that does need a takana, which is Bia Psula. So if we're going to create a concept of a Bia Psula, there has to be a concomitant concept of Chalitza Psula, because people lump those things together. And therefore, we're never going to be able to put that across unless we really, really dumbify things more. So we just make it very simple. If you do Yibam and Chalitza, you're okay. If you did either a Get or Mamar, you're messed up. Okay, that people, even dummies, can figure out. And that brings us to a very important moment over here, which is the insight of our Richard Hadron Alach Rabban Gamliel.